الحمد لله رب العالمين وبه نستعين ولا حول ولا قوة إلا بالله العلي العظيم، ثم الصلاة والسلام على أشرف الأنبياء والمرسلين وخاتم النبيين وسيد المرسلين أبي القاسم محمد. وعلى آل بيته الطيبين الطاهرين المعصومين، لا سيما بقية الله في الأرضين. Respected elders, brothers, sisters in Islam and Iman, Salamun alaykum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh. May Allah accept all your a'mal, all your fasting, your praying, your Quran, your charity, your good acts of kindness in this month, and may Allah give us the tawfiq to serve Him even better in whatever remains. The topic that we've been privileged to be covering over the last few nights has been looking at the life lessons that we can derive from the story of Nabi Ibrahim alayhi salam. Last night we looked at some of those things that Nabi Ibrahim points out in his dialogue with the mushrikeen, with the idol worshippers at that time, that show how a believer is privileged in his life. A believer has access to blessings that a worshipper of idols, one who doesn't have belief in Allah, they don't have. We talked about things like seeking rizq from Allah, seeking the special rizq of Allah. We talked about seeking the amn and the safety and protection and that sense of security from Allah as well. Tonight we want to look at what happens with the dialogue that Nabi Ibrahim has with his people. How does that ultimately end up? What is the response of his people to the logical arguments Nabi Ibrahim brings up? And so I'd first invite you to look at Surah Maryam, Surah number 19, verse number 46. Nabi Ibrahim presents his arguments to Azar, and we've been translating the word, the relationship that he has with Azar as being his father. But as I pointed out a couple of nights ago, father is, in English, it doesn't necessarily mean your biological father. You can use father for anybody who, any elderly figure who is close to you and has a fatherly role in your life. For example, if somebody has a stepfather, they can call them their father. Or if somebody has like an uncle and that uncle plays the role of a father, that person can be a father for them as well. And as I mentioned on that night, Azar, even though the Quran refers to him as the Ab of Nabi Ibrahim, he is not the Walid of Nabi Ibrahim. Walid is the biological father. When Nabi Ibrahim prays for his Walid, رَبَّنَا اغْفِرْ لِي وَلِي وَالِدَيَّ وَلِلْمُؤْمِنِينَ يَوْمَ يَقُومُ الْحِسَابُ, that's one of the du'as of Nabi Ibrahim that we also recite. O Allah, forgive me and my parents, and the mu'mineen, all the believers, on the day of resurrection, the day of accounting. That walid is somebody else, that's his biological father. But the father that he is arguing with, the father who is an idol worshipper, is somebody else. His name is Azar, and he's not his biological father. He presents his arguments to his ab, his father Azar, but Azar is not willing to listen. Despite Nabi Ibrahim trying different tactics, different arguments, different approaches, despite his speaking with such love and such compassion to his father, finally the response of Azar is the following in verse number 46. أعوذ بالله من الشيطان الرجيم. قال أراغب أنت عن آلهتي يا إبراهيم. O Ibrahim, he tells him, are you inclining away from our gods, from my gods? Azar is such a staunch idol worshipper that he's not even willing to say something like this, that, O Ibrahim, are you repudiating my gods? Are you turning away from them? Are you forsaking them? Are you calling them names? Are you saying that we're doing shirk? None of that. He just wants to mention like as little as possible. He's like, أَرَاغِبٌ أَنْتَ عَنْ آلِهَتِي يَا إِبْرَاهِيمُ, are you turning away from them? Are you inclining away from them, O Ibrahim? لَإِنْ لَمْ تَنْتَهِ, if you don't stop doing this, if you don't desist from doing this, لَأَرْجُمَنَّكَ I will most definitely, the expression, the way the Arabic goes here, like لَأَرْجُمَنَّكَ is with emphasis. I will most definitely stone you to death. وَهْجُرْنِي مَلِيَّ Get away from me, go far away from me, and stay away from me for a very long time. Maliya is a very long time. It can even mean forever in Arabic. So he basically, his response is that of rejecting Nabi Ibrahim's call to Tawheed. He says that if you're going to do this, then the result is you're going to be killed or you're going to be exiled, and I don't want to have anything to do with you. Now, what is the response that Nabi Ibrahim gives to his father Azar? He says, قَالَ سَلَامٌ عَلَيْكَ سَأَسْتَغْفِرُ لَكَ رَبِّي إِنَّهُ كَانَ بِي حَفِيًّا First of all, he tells him, سَلَامٌ عَلَيْكَ Now, what does this mean, سَلَامٌ عَلَيْكَ You might be thinking, what does سَلَامٌ عَلَيْكُمْ have to do here? Here, his father has just told him, like, get away from me for a very long time. He's told him, he threatened him, threatened to stone him to death. Why is he telling him salam? The answer is that salamun alaykum, the way that we usually use it is a form of greeting. It's a form of dua for one another. When we say salamun alaykum, it's one of the highest forms of dua that we can pray for one another. Salam is one of the best blessings that somebody can be given. How do we know that? Because when Allah describes paradise in Surah Yasin, He says, Salam, qawlam min rabbir rahim, wamtazul yawma ayyuhal mujrimun. One of the wonderful features about paradise is that people who are in Jannah are in a state of salam, meaning that it's utter comfort and safety and security, very similar to the amn that we talked about yesterday. So when we say salam to one another, it's a dua. We're praying to Allah, Oh Allah, grant this person salam. But that's not the only expression, that's not the only way that salamun alaykum is used. And I want to direct you here to Surah number 28, Surah Qasas, verse number 55. In this verse, Allah describes one of the qualities of a believer. He says, وَإِذَا سَمِعُوا اللَّغْوَ أَعْرَضُ عَنْهُ When they hear لغو, vain talk, vain discourse, words that don't have any usefulness to them. And music, which is haram, is included in this as well too. وَإِذَا سَمِعُوا اللَّغْوَ When they hear لَغْو أَعْرَضُ عَنْهُ They turn away from it. وَقَالُوا لَنَا أَعْمَالُنَا وَلَكُمْ أَعْمَالُكُمْ They say that we have our أَعْمَال, we have our actions, and you have your actions. سَلَامٌ عَلَيْكُمْ لَا نَبْتَغِ الْجَاهِلِينَ سَلَامٌ عَلَيْكُمْ And we will not pursue the jahileen, those who are ignorant. Again here, سَلَامٌ عَلَيْكُمْ isn't used as a greeting. It's used in the same meaning, it apparently, according to the commentators, as we see here in Surah Maryam, Surah number 19. Salamun alaykum can be used as a way of saying that, you know what, I'm not going to argue with you. Right? That's it, I'm leaving you, I'm leaving this aside. You know, we're going to end this discussion here. There's no point in discussing with you anymore. Nabi Ibrahim had arrived at that point. He presented argument after argument. He talked about how this worship of idols is futile. He talked about how you're worshipping the shaitan. He talked about other things. And then finally he realizes that Azar is not going to listen anymore. At that point, Salamun alaykum. You know, this is the end of it. We're leaving this aside. That's one thing he says. And then he makes a promise to his father. He says, سَأَسْتَغْفِرُ لَكَ رَبِّي I am going to seek forgiveness for you from my Lord. إِنَّهُ كَانَ بِي حَفِيًّا First of all, this promise that he gives to ask forgiveness from his Lord, this shows us the compassion that Nabi Ibrahim has for Azar. And this is a lesson for us, that even despite him being a non-believer, despite him being a non-Muslim, despite his being a staunch idol worshipper, Nabi Ibrahim still has compassion for him. He still has hope for him. He still believes that there's a chance that he may switch over. Guidance may enter his heart. He may change his mind. He might decide otherwise. And so makes a promise. He says, I'm going to pray for you. I care for you. And he says, إِنَّهُ كَانَ بِي حَفِيًّا This is a very wonderful expression which shows us the relationship that Nabi Ibrahim has with Allah. See, he says that I'm going to ask forgiveness for you from my Lord, from Allah, from my Rabb. And then he describes what he knows of this Rabb. as a hope, something which is hopeful for his father, Azar. He says that my Lord is Hafi to me. Hafi. Now, Hafi is a very interesting word in Arabic. You see, brothers and sisters, the Arabic words, they're very rich in meaning. And when we go and look at what they have to offer, we can gain a lot from them. He says, Allah, my Lord, is Hafi. Hafi is somebody who pays attention to the minute needs that somebody else has. And one by one, he goes about taking care of them in the best of manners. Right? Sometimes, you know, when you have a need, you go and talk to somebody. You say, okay, I have, this is what I need from you. Sometimes they'll be like, yeah, I'll take care of it for you. But they just do like a haphazard job at it. They just do something, right? And they say, okay, here you go. I've taken care of it for you. But when you go and look at it, there's still a lot of stuff left to do. Like you call in a cleaner to professionally clean your house, and they take care of it, you give them the money, and you go back and look, and you start looking at all the small little corners, you see that they didn't do a good job on that. Such a person isn't hafi. They weren't precise in attending to all the intricate needs that you had in terms of cleaning the house. But when it comes to Nabi Ibrahim and the relationship he has with Allah, the way he sees Allah's role in his life, he sees that at every moment, whatever the small little details that were there, Allah was there for him. Now, at this point, after he makes this promise, he tells his father, he says, وَأَعْتَزِلُكُمْ وَمَا تَدْعُونَ مِن دُونِ اللَّهِ وَأَدْعُوا رَبِّي. I'm now going to part company with you. I'm going to go very far from you. I'm leaving you. I'm leaving you and all the idol worshippers, وَمَا تَدْعُونَ مِن دُونِ اللَّهِ, and the idols that you worship as well too. وَأَدْعُوا رَبِّي. And I'm going to pray and make dua to my Lord. عَسَىٰ أَلَّا أَكُونَ بِدُعَاءِ رَبِّي شَقِيًّا. Before we talk about this concept of i'tizal and tabarri, which is mentioned in this verse, the concept of repudiating and going away from and renouncing the idol worshippers, I just want to mention a point regarding the last part of this verse. It's a very beautiful verse. It says, وَأَدْعُوا رَبِّي. I'm going to make dua to my Lord. عَسَىٰ أَلَّا أَكُونَ بِدُعَاءِ رَبِّي شَقِيًّا. Perhaps Allah will listen to me. Perhaps he will not reject my dua. What scholars of the Quran tell us is that this verse right here, and the way that Nabi Ibrahim calls upon Allah, is a perfect example of the way a believer should be between hope and fear. On one hand, Nabi Ibrahim is very hopeful. He's calling upon Allah. He knows, he says, Allah is somebody who, an entity who attends to even the smallest of details when it comes to my life. Right? I'm going to call upon him. He has that hope. But on the other hand, he's not bold. He's not saying that, oh, I'm guaranteed a response. Perhaps it's the case that my Lord will listen to me and he'll grant me my response. It's that perfect balance there, and exactly the way we should be. On one hand, we don't give up hope. We always know that Allah is there, and he's Rahman, he's Rahim, he's Hafi, as Nabi Ibrahim says. He's there, he knows the most intricate of our needs, and he's willing to respond to them, and he's there for us. On the other hand, it's his prerogative. We didn't do anything to force Allah to answer our du'as. If he answers, it's on his own prerogative, it's out of his own lutf, his own grace, his own mercy, his own love. Now, let's go back to this concept here where Nabi Ibrahim says, وَأَعْتَزِلُكُمْ. I'm going to leave you, and I'm going to leave aside those things that you worship. A very similar statement is made in Surah Mumtahana, Surah number 60, verse number 4. أعوذ بالله من الشيطان الرجيم. Allah says, قَدْ كَانَتْ لَكُمْ أُسْوَةٌ حَسَنَةٌ فِي إِبْرَاهِيمَ. There is an example for you to emulate in Nabi Ibrahim, وَالَّذِينَ مَعَهُ, and those who are with him. إِذْ قَالُوا لِقَوْمِهِمْ, when they said to their people, إِنَّا بُرَآءُ مِنْكُمْ. We do bara'at of you. We do tabarri of you. You've heard this term, tawalla and tabarra, tawalli and tabarri is more precise actually. We do tabarri of you. We repudiate you. We don't have anything to do with you. We renounce you. Minkum wa mimma ta'buduna min dunillah. You and that which you worship other than Allah. If you've been paying attention, you'll see that this is exactly the same statement that we just saw in Surah Maryam. Kafarna bikum wa bada baynana wa baynakum al-adaw. We renounce you and now enmity is there between us and between you, and hatred, abadan, forever, hatta tu'minu billahi wahdahu, until you believe in Allah alone. A question comes up here, which is that, is this the way that we should be with non-believers? Is this verse and the previous verse telling us that the stance that we should take towards disbelievers is that we have to renounce them? That we have to tell them that from now on, whenever we see you, there's hatred between us and you, we're enemies? If somebody just reads this verse in the Quran or the other one, they might come to this conclusion that this is what the Quran is telling us about the way that we should be interacting with non-believers. Point number one here, though, is that when we're trying to understand what the Quran has to say about a topic, we can't just look at one or two verses. We have to look at all the verses. And it's very important, because sometimes we just look at one thing and we have tunnel vision and we think that this is all that has been said about the topic. No, this isn't all that's been said about the topic. Point number two is that this verse and the stance that Nabi Ibrahim takes is a very important stance, but it doesn't apply in general to non-believers. So what is the stance that we should take towards non-believers? And this is a very, very important and relevant question for all of us, because after all, we're living in a society where the majority of people are non-Muslims. What is it that, how should we be interacting with them? What sort of attitude should we have towards them? Should we be taking a stance of hatred? Or should we take, on the other hand, opposite side of the spectrum, should we be treating them just like, as if they were Muslims, and treat them just exactly the same as others? What is the treatment that we should have? I personally believe that this is a very important question, a very relevant question, and something that hasn't been addressed to a great extent, and something that we definitely do need to talk about. Tonight, I just want to mention a couple of the verses that give us guidance on this topic of how we should be treating non-believers. And this is not a full treatment of the topic, but I think it's enough for the purpose of our discussion. Let us first go to what ulama say about this. When ulama look at the Quran, and this is, I'm quoting here from Ayatollah Jawadi Amuli. He says that when we look at the Quran and the teachings of Islam in general, there are three principles that we have when it comes to dealing with non-Muslims. Principle number one is to treat them well. Okay, and this is something which may be obvious, right? But let me just quote you the verse here. This is from Surah Baqarah, Surah number 2, verse number 83. Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala says, A'udhu billahi min shaitan ajim, Qulu linnasi husna. Which means, talk well to the people, speak well to the people. Linnas, all people, speak well to them. And it's a command. We are commanded as Muslims to speak well to everyone, whether they be Muslim, whether they be non-Muslim, whether they be Shia, whether they be Sunni, whether they be our family, or whether they be somebody else. Okay, we're supposed to speak well, and speaking well is the first way that we interact with other people. But of course, what comes along with it is treating them well also. So this is the first and foremost command that we have from the teachings of Islam. In generally speaking, when it comes to non-Muslims, we're supposed to treat them well. And we see that being practiced in the seerah of the Ahlul Bayt alayhi wasalam. There are so many stories that we have about the, generally speaking, how they would treat non-Muslims kindly. Once Amir al-Mu'mineen was walking along, Imam Sadiq alayhi wasalam was walking along in the desert with a companion, and he saw that there was a man who was sitting under a tree. He tells his companion, it seems that this man is in need of some water. It's a hot day, he's sitting alone there, let's go and give him some water. So they go to him, and they fully quench his thirst, and afterwards the companion asks the Imam. He says, oh Imam, you know that this man was a Christian. Did you still intend to give him that water? Maybe what this companion had in mind was that we're supposed to take care of the needs of Muslims. We're supposed to treat Muslims well, but not non-Muslims. Imam alayhi salam says that no. I knew that he was a Christian, but I saw that he was in need, and in such matters, I like to give charity to the Christians as well too when they are found in such a condition. Whether they be Christian, whether they be Muslim, non-Muslim, giving charity, treating kindly is something that we are supposed to do for everyone. In general. That's principle number one. However, and this is important, this does not mean that we treat and we perceive the image of a non-Muslim the same as a Muslim. After all, there is a difference, right? There is something different about them. And so the second instruction that ulama give us, this is when looking at a holistic level of what Islam has to offer, they say that don't become attached in your heart to non-Muslims. On the one hand, you're treating them well. You're interacting with them in a kind sort of way. You're inviting them with your actions to truth. But on the other hand, don't let your heart become attached to them. Don't pin your heart to them. Because after all, they have taken a path which is different than your path. If you love the truth, if you love and you believe that Islam is the truth, and you believe that the Islamic practices and Islamic lifestyle and Islamic culture is truth, then other than that is something that you can't love. After all, you have one heart, and your heart cannot have love for two opposite entities in it at the same time. It's something that makes sense on a very logical level. So on one hand, we're supposed to treat everyone, generally speaking, in a kind sort of way. On the other hand, we have to be careful not to let our hearts become inclined towards them. Where do we find this proof? What's the proof of this? Let's look at the Quran. This is from Surah Hud, Surah number 11, verse number 113. أعوذ بالله من الشيطان الرجيم ولا تركنوا إلى الذين ظلموا. Do not incline towards those who are الذين ظلموا. In the Quran, we have two opposite groups of people. الذين آمنوا. You must have heard this term, الذين آمنوا. This is Muslims, believers. And the opposite of this, الذين ظلموا. Those who do ظلم. Okay, الَّذِينَ ظَلَمُوا لَا تَرْكَنُوا إِلَيْهِمْ. Don't incline towards them. The word تَرْكَنُوا comes from the word rukun, which means to recline in a way that you're relying on them. Now, practically speaking, what does this mean? Do not incline. Does it mean that we don't depend on them in any sort of things that we need? No. We're told that we're supposed to be interacting on the level of in our society with Muslims and non-Muslims alike. We can do business with them. We can study with them, we can do projects together, we can work together, all of that is okay. However, there are some things that we have to be careful about. Okay, some examples that are given by our scholars. One of them is that when it comes to talking about our religion and expressing our faith, we should never compromise for the sake of non-Muslims. We shouldn't try to hide who we are and what we do just to appease others, just to make it seem like, oh, we're just like you. No, we're not. We have a separate identity. We have a different way of life. We have a different practice. However, we are more than willing to live in a cooperative sort of environment, in a society together, and we'll cooperate, we'll treat each other kindly, but we will maintain our own identity and we won't compromise on that in any way. Particularly when it comes to those things which are difficult to talk about and difficult to practice. For example, right, when we eat at a dinner table, right, we're not supposed to eat at a table where alcohol is served. Right? Now this is one of the things that we find difficult because it's pretty common when you go to like a working dinner, that they'll have alcohol on the table. We have to like unabashedly, without any shame, speak up and say, this is the way, this is what religion is about. Otherwise, we're not keeping up to this instruction. وَلَا تَرْكَنُوا إِلَى الَّذِينَ. Don't incline towards them. Maintain your own identity. Another example of what this entails is, according to the ulama, this is from Allama Tawatabai rahmatullahi alayhi, he says that an example of this is to not abandon something just because they're not happy with it. If you find that there's something that we believe in, that we stand for, something that we know to be true, but just because the non-Muslims are not happy with it, we shouldn't just erase it from our religion or our curriculum, for example. No, we have to stick with it. This is our principle. This is what we believe in. This is what we are. Another example of this is appointing them to administer affairs of Muslims or head the society. If we have positions of leadership, positions of administration within the Muslim community, these are not to be given to non-Muslims unless there's extenuating circumstances. They are meant for Muslims to take up. Right? Whatever it may be, whether it be in our communities, whether it be in our schools, whether it be in the different efforts that we organize and put forth, these positions of leadership and administration should be given to the Muslims. Please say salawat ala Muhammad. So, just to summarize, until now we've talked about two of the main instructions that we have about the interaction that we should have with non-Muslims. One of them is treating them well. Number two is not to be attached to them with our hearts. And number three is to be careful, to be cautious. Okay? We shouldn't, at the end of the day, we should understand that we're dealing with individuals who have a different set of beliefs than us. Okay? And because of that, it can be the case that we can be influenced by them in a negative sort of way, where we end up compromising on our own faith. So keeping our interaction to that which is necessary, that which is productive, but not going beyond that and having intimate relationships and close friendships. That would fall under that category. Now, there's a point I want to mention here, which is that about saying salam. Many of you have heard about this concept that within our teachings of Islam, we have this instruction that when a non-Muslim says salam to us, they say salamun alaykum, according to hadith, we should respond by saying alaykum, not by saying alaykum salam. Sometimes this question comes up, does that mean that we shouldn't say salam to our non-Muslim friends? Let's say that somebody is interested in becoming Muslim and they say salamun alaykum to us. Should we not say alaykum salam? Should we just say alaykum? This is an important point because after all, we're part of the society and there are people who are interested in Islam and they will be coming to us and saying salamun alaykum to us. Our friends do that in our schools. So what do we do? How do we respond? We should understand that there's a history behind this. There was a particular time in history where there was a group of Jews who were showing friendliness towards Muslim and the Prophet, our Prophet. However, they had ulterior motives. They were actually enemies. And they would say something that would sound like salamun alaykum, but actually they would be saying assamu alaykum. Assam means death. They would be praying for the death of the Prophet, and they would say that to him. At that time, he instructed the Muslims that when you respond to them, just say alaykum. Don't say assalamu alaykum. So if they're saying something good to you, then you're praying for them that in return. But if they are actually praying for something bad, then you're returning that back to them. You're saying alaykum. However, in today's world, when we're interacting with non-Muslims who have no ulterior motive, they're not enemies. They're earnestly trying to find out about Islam, and they say salamun alaykum, how should we respond? One of our contemporary Maraji, he talks about this. He says that when it comes to greeting non-Muslims, if they are not our enemies, and they are not enemies of Islam, then he says that greeting them in a way which is kind and shows love and kindness and is a way of treating them well is something which is good, and there's no problem in doing so. So I just wanted to mention this point. I've been asked about this in the past, and perhaps it's something which is a question in your mind as well too. Now let's finally, in conclusion, go back to the verse of Nabi Ibrahim, where Nabi Ibrahim says to his people, "Inna bura'a'um minkum," we disassociate from you, and now hatred and enmity has come between us and you. How do we understand this? How is this an example for us? Because until now we've seen that the teachings of Islam are to treat non-Muslims kindly, to interact with them, but of course to not have our heart be inclined towards them and to be careful as well too. The way we can put all this together is by realizing that this stance that Nabi Ibrahim takes is the very last stance. After arguing with his people, after demonstrating love, after promising to ask for forgiveness for his father, at the end, after it's become clear that there's no hope of return, and it's become clear that the idol worshippers are showing enmity towards the religion. They want to kill Nabi Ibrahim and his followers. They're arrogant in their response. At that point, the stance is one of complete disassociation. So when it comes to that, if there is somebody who is an enemy of Islam, an enemy of Muslims, they're completely unwilling to listen to logic, and they're also vicious in return, at that point the stance is another stance. It doesn't the 3 points about being kind and about treating them well, these type of things, doesn't apply in that case. In that case, the example of Nabi Ibrahim alayhi salam is an example for us, and we have to show a firm stance, that of tabarri, and repudiating and disassociating with non-Muslims who show that type of stance. Inshallah, tomorrow, if Allah gives us tawfiq, we'll explain a little bit more about this, give some practical examples, and move on to the next topic. We pray that Allah accepts these efforts, that He helps us to attain the purpose of the month of Ramadan, that He relieves the oppression of all those who are being oppressed innocently, especially those in Iraq and Syria and Palestine and other places, especially our fellow brethren, Muslims and Mu'mineen. We pray for the swift reappearance of the Imam of our time. We pray for the protection of all those who are serving the cause of Islam, especially the Maraji, and especially the Islamic leadership. Wassallallahu ala Muhammad wa ala al-Tahirin.
Assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullah. Tomorrow, inshallah, we will be commemorating the wafat of Bibi Khadijat al-Kubra. The majlis, the program will start at 7:30 with Quran recitation, and Sheikh Salim is going to be on the member at 8 o'clock sharp. Inshallah, the same program we have been format the same we have been following so far, and. After that, we'll be having a Marcia.